Megillah nikreit biyud aleph, biyud bet, biyud gimel, biyud dalid betetvav. Okay? So the Mishnah says that there are many different dates in Chodesh Adar for the reading of the Megillah. The easiest ones that we know about, that we're familiar with, are Yudalid and Tetvav, correct? The 14th and the 15th. So for example, if you live in Yerushalayim, when do you celebrate Purim? On the 15th. That day is classically known as what? Shushan Purim. Shushan is your classical case of a walled city. Shushan is where the miracle took place, and where the chiyuv, the obligation to read Megillah, was established, and therefore we start with the 15th of Shushan Purim. Then, from Shushan, we move on to any city that was walled, that had a wall around. They too should celebrate Purim on the 15th, like Shushan. But if I were to ask you, when was the city walled? At what point in history? You know, you have many cities that it had a wall, the wall fell, it was breached, it went up again, it went down again. Where would you put your finger on a historical map and say, that's the critical time period? It had to be walled at that moment in time. What would you say?
Yoshua.
Why Yoshua? Only because I misled you before and I mentioned Yoshua? Well, what would you say? You know, again, the miracle happened where? Shushan. So you want to expand from Shushan on to encompass all those cities that are walled. So what would be your critical time period in which you ask the question, was the city walled or not?
At the time
of the miracle, no?
Yep.
Why date it back to Yoshua? That's going to be a major issue.
That was before.
Yoshua was much, much earlier. That was the time after Moshe Rabbeinu died, and Yoshua led the people to conquer Eretz Yisrael. So we're going back, way back in the beginning of history. Why then should we look at a city and ask ourselves, was it walled at the time of Yoshua? For example, the city of Jericho. We know it was walled at the time of Yoshua. So if someone to read the Megillah today in Jericho, Jericho is now officially in Jewish hands. Again, it's not easy to go in there because now the Palestinians have sort of taken over there. But if theoretically you were to read the Megillah in Jericho, then since it was walled at the time of Yoshua, you're gonna read it on the 15th. That's odd. I mean, why back to the time of Yoshua? That's going to be an issue.
Even there's no wall there now.
It's irrelevant. We'll see. Even if there's no wall now. Tveria, for example, is going to be a whole issue. A whole sugi in the Gemara about Tveria. Tveria, was it walled at the time of Yoshua? Was it not? We don't know, and therefore we're in doubt. We have a suffix. So what do we do? When should we read the Megillah? So you'll have a whole group of cities that will have to read the Megillah when?
Twice,
both on Yudalid and Tesvav, which really means how many times?
Four
times. Even though the Mishnah doesn't know about two Megillah readings on Purim. The Mishnah only recognized one Megillah reading on Purim. And when was that Megillah reading? By day or by night? Anybody?
Night.
Well, he has a 50-50 chance of getting it right.
Day.
It was by day, right? The night reading of the Megillah is the sugi that I wanted to learn with you, but we'll leave it for later on. That's the sugi on Daf Dalet, about women, whether women are obligated in the midst of Megillah. That's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And that's going to be the sugya of reading the Megillah twice. So if you have a suffix, you don't know if this city was walled at the time of Yeshua or not, you're going to end up with four readings of the Megillah.
What significance does a walled city have?
I don't know. Okay, Bukhar, we'll get back to this. But what city? And once we know the significance, why we want to expand the 15th beyond Shushan. You see, if I were to ask you, why does Shushan celebrate Purim on the 15th of Adar? Would you have some sort of intuitive answer to that question? If you know Megillat Esther, not Masechet Megillah.
That's when they conquered the enemy.
Correct. They were in battle for an extra day, right, in the city of Shushan. You remember they killed another 500 enemies of the Jews, another 500 Amalekim that they killed on the 14th, when the rest of Shushan, the rest of the, not Shushan, I shouldn't say, but the rest of the Me'ah V'Shivim V'Sheva Medinos, the 127 Medinos, they were already rested already. So they already observed and celebrated Purim on the 14th. 14th was the day in which they were celebrating. But not so for the Shushanites. They added another day of battle in order to suppress their enemies, which ended only on the 15th. So the 15th was the day the Megillah testifies that they rested from their enemies, and therefore they celebrated Purim on the 15th. So I understand Shushan. But what does that have to do with other walled cities? So that's the question. You know, so we can understand Shushan, but to expand and make Shushan into what I call a concept, an abstract idea of a walled city, that we have to analyze why. And once we know why, we might be able to answer the question why we're dating it back to the time of Yeshua. Okay. But now the Mishnah adds Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel. Now, those days have nothing to do with the original historical miracle of Purim. There's no significance to Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel. So that's going to be a question that we have to answer. Okay. Let's go on in the Mishnah. Lo pachot v'lo yoter. In other words, you can't date the Megillah reading as early as Yud. You know, you can't go back to Yud. The 10th of Purim, the 10th of Adar is too early.
Tell us where we are then.
Yeah, we're reading the first line in the Mishnah on Daf Bet Amud Aleph. You can't lo yoter, you can't go beyond, what's your outer boundary?
16.
The 15th.
Right,
it can't be beyond the 15th. So you're out of so your bounds are between 11 and 15. You've got five candidate dates for the reading of Megillah, two of which we understand, three which we have no clue what they're all about. So you've got Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Dal, Tetvav. Okay? Krachim hamukafim choma. Krachim are large cities, what we call a metropolis, and they are mukafim choma. They are surrounded by a wall. Mimot Yoshua bin Nun, as far back in history as the time when Yoshua entered to conquer Eretz Yisrael from the seven nations. Bitetvav. They will read the Megillah on the 15th. So we now have at least some understanding of what the 15th is designated for, which cities?
Walled cities.
Mukafim choma miyemot Yoshua bin Nun. Clear? Kfarim vayarot gdolot korim biyudalit. The small villages called a kfar is a village, or the ayarot, the large cities, gdolot, Korin biyudalid, they will read on the 14th. Ella, but we give leeway for the kfarim. If they don't read on the 14th, they have three other options. What are the other three options? Shakfarim makdimim liyom haknisa. They could read as early as 11, 12, or 13.
Kfarim is walled?
Kfarim are villages. You got to write that down because it's going to come up over and over again. So I don't know, I can't give you permission to write in the Gemara on the side because I don't own those Gemarot, but maybe you're allowed to. I don't know what the policy here is. I'm very new here. This is only the second time in my life I was here, so I don't know if you guys are old timers here. So bear with me. Ketzad, what?
Most of us are here.
Oh, what?
Most of us come here a lot.
Come here a lot. Okay, I don't know. I don't know anything about the place. I just know that they invited me to come. Okay, what's Yom HaKnisa?
Day of entering or gathering?
Right. Yom HaKnisa is the day of entering. And what it means is that the villagers from the small places come into the large cities. They enter into the large cities. Yom HaKnisa. Now, how often do they come into the cities? We're going to see Rashi is going to describe the fact that they come in on Mondays and Thursdays. And what do they do on Mondays and Thursdays? They bring in supplies. They get paid for that. And what do they bring in? For example, they bring in mazon. Mazon would mean bread or food, foodstuff. And mayim, they would bring in water. So it means that these cities, because they were urban centers, they weren't producing. There was no farm area. They weren't producing grains to make bread. They weren't producing fruits and vegetables to eat with. Those were supplied by the outlying small towns, which are called the kfarim, the villagers. And those people would come in on the market days. When were the market days? Classically, on Monday and Thursday. And we're going to see that given any Chodesh Adar, Mondays and Thursdays will coincide, again, that's going to be part of our work, with Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel. So those three dates are possible dates for the Kfarim, for the members of the Kfarim to come in. They're in the big cities now. They come en masse, so we now have large populations of people that are entering in 3 days, 2 days, or 1 day before Purim. And Chazal, the Chachamim, allowed them to read the Megillah at that those early dates. We're going to see exactly how we know this, how we derive it, just to give you a flavor for what's going on. Now, I want to look at the Mishnah again, and I want you to tell me if you can. I know the answer to this question. Okay, sometimes I fake you out and I make believe I don't know, but I do know. Sometimes I make believe that I do know and I don't know. In this case, I know the answer to my question. There's some discrepancy in this Mishnah in terms of the choice of language. And by way of introduction, I have to tell you that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who authored the Mishnah, was extremely careful and meticulous about his choice of words. He was a Hebraic scholar, the likes of which we don't know throughout Jewish history. And take a look again at the Mishnah and see if you can find a certain inconsistency in the way Rabbi Yehuda Nasi formulates the Mishnah. If you have the answer to my question, if you've located the inconsistency, as I call it, then just raise your hand so I know that you're on board. Okay, one person has it. Anybody else? We'll give you some time. The time is clicking. The clock is ticking. Okay, time out. No, I'll give you a few moments. What is your first name again?
Cohen.
I don't see Cohen
here. Can we do a word for word?
Oh, here it is, Cohen. Oh, K-O-E-N. Wow, I never would have thought of spelling it that way, Cohen. So, just tell me which word you have in mind. You know, like, whisper it to me.
It's a few words.
But, well, let's say if Megillah is the first word in the Mishnah, what number would you get to find the source of the problem? How many have you counted beyond that?
Three.
One, two, three. You're up to Biyud Aleph? What's the discrepancy in Biyud Aleph? I don't see Biyud Aleph, Biyud Bet, Biyud Gimel, Biyud Dal.
The Mishnah lists so that the days are eligible.
Right.
11 to 15, but when it goes to the details, it starts from 15 and goes backwards.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, I didn't understand what you meant.
That's not the question.
Yeah, no. I didn't even get up to Biyud Aleph yet.
What about Nikat? Like,
yeah? Yeah, you got it. You got it. Yeah. Well, you're ahead of me already. I'm way behind you. Okay. Megillah. What's the second word in the Mishnah? Nikrate. Okay. Is going to be a discrepancy? Drop down a little bit, and then it says what on the third line?
Korin.
Do you see that? Now watch this. The difference between Nikrate and Korin, I'll have you know, is a very fundamental difference. And throughout Shas, throughout the entire Talmud, the Gemara is always sensitive to this. For example, at the beginning of Masechet Kiddushin, if you ever saw it, it says Haisha Niknet. It doesn't say like it does at the beginning of the second parak of Kiddushin. It says Haish Koneh. Niknet is what we call Nif'al. Or here, Nikret. It should be read. Korin means read it. What's the difference between Nikret and Korin? Is the obligation that the Megillah be read, or is the obligation that I read the Megillah? And it's very strange, because when I look at the opening line of the Mishnah, specifically the second word in the Mishnah, I get the impression that the Chiyuv is that the Megillah be read, and yet when I get to the third line in the Mishnah, I get the impression that the Megillah has to, you have to read it. You know, the subject of Korin is the absolute obligation incumbent upon the person, whereas the subject of Nikret is that the Megillah somehow should be read.
And by the community, you're saying?
Yeah, by the community, or the Megillah should be read. Maybe if the Megillah could read itself, I don't know. I don't know if we're talking Megillah. But somehow the Megillah should be read. It's a very strange syntax. And Rebbe, when he wrote the Mishnah, he himself was not consistent with this. So the one to notice this problem, which is, as I told you before, is recorded here in the back, is the Ritva. How many of you have heard of the Ritva? By show of hands. The Ritva. Okay, he was a Spanish Rishon that goes back like 9 centuries ago. One of the great Rishonim. And the Ritva, and he was followed by many others, all noticed this. Why didn't the Mishnah say Korin? The way the Mishnah, I'm going to formulate the Ritva's question, and you're going to tell me which one of the two words, Nikret or Korin, should be the first choice. He asks the question in the following way. He says, why did the Mishnah say Nikret? It should have said Korin. So which one is the rule, and which one seems to be the exception to the rule?
Nikret is the exception.
Excellent. So he finds the word Nikret, Darshani, it cries out to be interpreted. Why does it say Nikret? And again, I wouldn't necessarily dedicate too much time to this question because it's very technical, except for the fact that it really opens up the whole discussion about what's going on in the Mishnah. I know it's, even though on the face of it, it sounds secondary, it sounds insignificant, what we call tafel, but yet it's really ikar, something very, very important. Says the Ritva the following. Korin mashma'uto sheyesh alehem chiyuv. When you use the word korin, it implies what?
Chiyuv.
In English, if I can trouble you? An obligation. An absolute obligation.
An individual.
We'll get to that. You're already a few steps ahead. He says that since the Mishnah says Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel, which is addressing whom? Which group? Of the population, the Bnei Akfarim, right? The word Korin would be totally out of place.
Inappropriate.
Excellent. Why would it be inappropriate? Because, in fact, there is no absolute obligation incumbent upon the Bnei Akfarim to read on Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel. They have a choice. Uba'ofan she'ein ritzonam shel Bnei Akfarim lakdim liyom haknisa. If they decided they don't want to take the Rabbanan up on their leeway, if they don't want to take the Chachamim up on their invitation, then ritzonam likro ki Bnei Ayarot, and they would rather prefer, you know, the real day of Purim, which is the 14th, together with the other members of the city, harishut biyadam. Now wait a second. We have a principle in halacha called takanat chachamim. When there's a takanat chachamim, when the chachamim establish something, we don't mess around. The Torah itself says, "V'asita kechol asher yerucha." In Parashat Shoftim, you have to follow the rules and the obligations incumbent upon you by virtue of the chachamim. If this is a takanat chachamim, yud aleph, yud bet, yud gimel, again, it's going to depend upon when Sheni v'chamishi is, when it's Monday and Thursday, but what do you mean you come along, you say, you know what, thank you, but no thank you. I'm going to read it on yud dalet. And how does the Ritva know that this is only reshut, that there's no obligation to read on the Yom HaKnisa? He knows it because Rebbe chose to say Hamagilah Nikreit and not Korinat Hamagilah. We're going to see later on that Rebbe, when he gets to Yudalit and Tetvav, he's going to shift his language from Nikreit to Korin in order to convey what message? When we get to Yudalit and Tetvav? That it's an absolute obligation. There's no Rishut. But getting back to my original question, isn't this an anomaly, meaning a strange mystery, to talk about a Takanat Chachamim, which allows the Bnei Kfarim to read the Megillah on Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, and Yud Gimel, and yet it's not an obligation. It's, shall we say, optional. Where do we find such a concept? That the Ritva doesn't address. That's for us guys, right here in this classroom. Anybody want to take a stab at it?
I mean, where else in other...
Well, if you have another example, that's great. Right now I'm not thinking of any other example, but I just want to know on a pure conceptual level, where do we find such a thing to call something, describe it as a Takarat Chachamim, and then turn around and say, you know, it's optional. Very strange. It's almost a plus not A at the same time. It's always Dover be Pucho. To call something a Takarat Chachamim and then turn around and say, well, it's optional. What do we see from this, my friends? There are two types of Takanat Chachamims. One Takanat Chachamim is this has a definite goal and there's no other way to reach and achieve this goal. The Chachamim will tell you how to get from point X to point Y, and that's absolute, that's unconditional. There's no volunteer. We're not going to ask you to, you know, they used to have the Boy Scouts, you know, well, I volunteer to serve in the Boy Scouts. No, it's absolutely chovah. There's another type of Takanat Chachamim in which the Chachamim have your best interest in mind. They want to give you a leeway. They want to give you a way of expanding your alternatives, expanding the possibilities of getting to the goal. And then you could say, E-F-Shi B'Takanat Chachamim. Which doesn't mean that I'm insulting the Chachamim. I'm not throwing you back in the face and saying, forbid, heaven forbid, you know, I don't want you, go fly a kite. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know what? I can go back and exist in the original form without your offering me this leeway. So what was the original form of Megillat Esther? Which dates on the calendar in Adar were designated for the reading of the Megillah?
14th
and 15th. What the Chachamim did is they offered the Bnei Kfarim a sort of, again, I'm using a word from my country, chupar. I don't know, that's actually Arabic. How would you say in English a chupar? You know,
suck in Spanish.
What is it called?
Chupar is to suck in Spanish.
I don't know, that's not good. We don't want to suck.
Like
no. What we're talking about, chupar in Arabic means
Arabic.
To give you a little bit of leeway, you know, give you a gift, so to speak. You deserve an easier time, make it more comfortable for you. So since the Bnei Akfarim come into, when did they get to the cities? There wasn't the transportation that we have today. It wasn't easy to get from place to place. You know, you had to go by horse and buggy or by donkey. So Chachamim wanted to make it easier for them to facilitate the possibility that they could, in fact, read the Megillah and obtain this mitzvah of Megillat Esther. So what did the Chachamim say to them?
You have options.
We'll give you another option. You know what? You're coming in on Monday in any event, because you have to go in for a livelihood. And not only that, the Bnei Ayarot need you desperately to supply them with food and drink. So therefore, we're going to facilitate, we're going to come likratchem, and we're going to offer you the possibility of Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel. How does Rebbe convey the message that this is only an opportunity? It's not an absolute takana as a requirement that's forced upon you, that's compelling?
Nikrate.
You know, it could be read. And if it's not read, that's fine. Then we read the next part of the Mishnah. What does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that kfarim v'ayarot gedolot korim v'yudalot. Now we're talking about kfarim that were not able to come in on Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel. So none of those dates worked out with their entry into the big cities. And certainly those who live in the big cities, we didn't offer them any option of going outside the bounds of which day? Yudalot. Korin B'Yudalad, says the Ritva. What does Korin B'Yudalad mean? An absolute, unconditional obligation. Yudalad is not a matter of option. Yudalad, for those who need Yudalad, who are included in the obligation of Yudalad, is an absolute requirement. Ella, but what do they do? Shekfarim makdimim liyom haknisa. The Mishnah says, if you live in the village, we'll offer you the option of reading the Megillah at an earlier date, namely when you come in. Ketzad, how does this work out, says the Mishnah? Chal liyot yudalad bisheni, if yudalad is on a Monday. Kfarim vayarot gdolot korim bo bayom. Because the earlier date of Yom HaKnisa, which would be Thursday, would be on what calendar date?
Yud.
It would be Yud. And we've already established that the earliest date we can go back to is Yud Aleph. We can't go back to Yud. So therefore, if Purim, I'm talking about Purim of Yudalid, corresponds, or how should I say it, falls on a Monday, then the Kfarim have no option. They must come in on that Monday of Purim. They'll sell their wares. We're going to see later on that technically there's no... Again, I'm not talking about Minagim now, but just technically, according to the strict letter of the Lord, there's no Iser Malacha on Purim. You can do any work on Purim. It's not a day that's sanctified with an Iser Malacha. And they'll sell it on Monday. They have an option of coming in the Thursday before, but that's too early. That's on the 10th.
What if it's opposite? The 14th is Thursday, the 11th.
So let's see if we go through all the possibilities. So the Mishnah says what? Chal liyot yudalid v'sheni kfarim vayarot gedolot korim bo bayom. So they'll read on yudalid, which is very nice. That means that everyone except for the Shushanites, let's say, and those who are in walled cities from Yeshua ben Nun's time, everybody else, which is the largest preponderant majority of the population, will be reading on yudalid. So we're all going to celebrate Purim together. Umukafot choma. However, those cities that are walled, limachar, they'll read on the 15th. What day of the week is that?
Tuesday.
Fine. Chal liyot bishlishi o birevi'i. If your dalit falls on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. So now we go back to Monday. So Monday would be either Yud Gimel, or if you want to go back, let's say Purim is falling on a Wednesday, then Monday would be on Yud Bet. Correct? So you have Yud Bet, Yud Gimel in this case. Kfarim makdimim liyom haknisa, vayarot gdolot korim bo bayom. So the villagers have an option of reading on Yud Bet and Yud Gimel, and the city people, the city slickers we'll call them, will read it on Yud Dalet. Umakafot chama l'macha. Chal liyot b'chamishi. What happens if Yud Dalet, meaning Purim, falls on a Thursday? So now, if they want to read on a Monday, what calendar date will Monday be? Yud Aleph. Is Kfarim Vayarot Gdolot Korim Bo Bayom? Why is that? Umukafot Oma Lemachar. In other words, the Mishnah seems to be mysterious over here. Because the Mishnah says that, let's work this out. Again, it would be great if we had a calendar. You know, I don't have a calendar, but if you could do this in your mind, do the mental calculation, the arithmetic in your mind. If the day of Purim is on Thursday, correct?
He doesn't give you an option. He wants you to read on Thursday. He doesn't want you to read on Thursday.
And why is that? And when is Yud Aleph an option? You follow my question?
Right.
Because it would seem to me that if Purim is on a Thursday, let's go backwards, right. So that means Wednesday is Yud Gimel, correct? And Tuesday is Yud Bet. Then Monday is Yud Aleph.
Right.
And he's not giving you the option of Yud Aleph.
He only is giving you the option of a Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel.
Yeah.
Only if it falls
on a Thursday or Monday.
Right.
On a Wednesday, you have, if it falls on a Wednesday, the 14th, then you only have Tuesday and Monday, which is
right, so you
which
have to read it on
Monday. 13 and 12.
He allows you to read on Tuesday?
Or Wednesday?
Oh,
no, he doesn't allow you to read. If it falls 14th and Wednesday,
right? So.
Right, he wants you to read on Monday and Thursday only. Monday and Thursday, because that's when you come in. Oh, yeah. So you can't read it on Tuesday.
So let's just skip to the end of the Mishnah, just that we get, again, we're this is really not the way to do it, but take a look at the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Chal liyot achar ha-Shabbat. Let's say your Dalet falls on what day? on Sunday. Okay? Then he says, Kfarim Maktimim Liyom Haknisa. What would be the Yom Haknisa before Sunday?
Thursday.
So what day of the month would that be?
11.
That would be the 11th. So this is the case in which the Megillah could be read by the Bnei Kfarim on Yud Aleph. I'm only pointing it out to you because I want you to know that there is this one scenario in which the Megillah could be read on Yud Aleph. All right? So hold that in abeyance for a minute. And I wanted to point something else out to you.
Maybe can I understand something? If it's a Yud base, I cannot read it on a Tuesday. Like it said, you could read it on
Monday?
No,
or Thursday.
That's it.
Right.
One of these days only falls on Monday and Thursday.
You'd right. Correct.
Falls on Shabbat.
All right, we didn't flesh that out. Azari is right. We're going to go through all the scenarios. We'll make a summary of it. We'll write a chart. We'll give it out. We'll photocopy
it.
You know,
that only if it falls on Monday, Thursday, it doesn't say that.
Well, that's the premise that the Bnei Kfarim we're only helping them out if on Mondays and Thursdays, because those are the days in which they're anyway benefiting from making this trek for their own personal purposes. Once they're doing that, we're going to afford them with the possibility of reading the Megillah.
And they have to read it in those cities?
No. They can read it anywhere they want.
No, I can read it in my village on a Monday?
No.
So they have to read it
in the walled city.
In other words, there's no reading of the Megillah on any other date besides Yudalid and Tetvav
in
a kfar. Well, Tedvav is an impossibility because a kfar by definition is not wall.
Right.
But the kfarim could read in the kfar on Yudalid. But since they're not coming in on Yudalid, because Yudalid in these cases are not on a Monday or a Thursday, therefore we're giving them an option to read it on the day before Yudalid, which is a Monday or a Thursday, unless it's so far apart that it would require that they read the Megillah on Yud on the 10th, and that's going to be excluded. Or alternatively, if the Yom HaKnisa coincides with Yud Dalid, with Purim, that again, we're going to try, in other words, if we can satisfy the needs of the Kfarim and at the same time maintain a universal day for all the Jews, again, when I say universal, I'm always leaving out the Bnei Hakrachim Mukafim Choma. But I'm saying if we can get a day in which we gather together the largest possible population for Yudalid, meaning the Kfarim and the Ayarot, and at the same time satisfy their need to not have to make two trips, then that's what the halacha is only going to bend itself and allow them the Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, if Yudalid would require them, because it's not a Monday or Thursday, to make a separate trip. And that we don't want to impose.
So maybe it's not the reason why on Thursday you don't go back to Monday? Because
correct. So if...
Because this will be universal for
correct.
Everyone.
So if we have a coincidence of Purim Yudalid on a Thursday or a Monday, then we're not going to allow for this Yom HaKnisa. Why? Because then, without any extra burden imposed upon the Bnei Kfarim, we could have the whole population celebrating Purim together.
Maybe
last question. Knisa means when they come into the city in order to sell their to market whatever they have to market.
And the reason why they gave them these options is so that, let's say, if they're coming back and it happens to be Yudal, they didn't want them to read on the road, or how is it?
Well,
meaning, why couldn't they read it on Yudal? Who cares where they are? They're in the middle of the road. They read it over there.
I'm not sure what you mean by the middle of the road. Again, if they lived in a kfar, wouldn't they have to make a separate trip to come in to hear the Megillah on Yudal?
In those villages.
They didn't have people reading
it.
Not usually. I mean, you could theoretically have, but generally speaking...
Oh, so they would have to anyways come to the city?
Correct. So if the day of Purim coincides with Monday and Thursday, you're not imposing upon them an extra trip. But if, on the other hand, Yudal is not a Monday, nor is it a Thursday, then they're going to have to come in on Yudalid plus the Monday and Thursday, because the market's only open on Mondays and Thursdays.
So they can't read it in their village, you say?
No, I'm saying if on Yudalid they would get together a group of people and read it on Yudalid in
their
village,
they're allowed.
That they're allowed to do. But again, it was rare for that to happen. You know, the assumption was that they didn't have, you know, they were more of the folk people and so forth. But I just wanted to add another important thing over here. And that is, why, remember our question from before, and he's got a whole piece on this which I wanted to share with you, at least highlight some of it. Why is it that the Chachamim made a distinction between the cities that would celebrate Purim on what day? The cities, the large cities, when did they read the Megillah?
14th.
On the 14th. And those cities that were walled that read on the 15th. Why that distinction?
Meaning, why didn't they include the city people as well in the Ural of Yudbeis with Gimel?
No. What I'm asking is, why not have, as we do in every other Chag, right, a Zman Misuyam, one day for that Chag? Here in Purim, leaving out the Kfarim for a moment, we have 2 days for Purim. One for the Ayarot, the big cities, and another day, or the 15th, for the walled cities.
You just said that because...
Okay. I gave it up already, but let's see it now in its original form, because there are nuances that are of differences. The first approach is that of the Ramban. And that's the approach that I shared with you before. The Ramban says the following. Everybody know who the Ramban was? Really one of the greatest of all our Rishonim was the Ramban. Yeah, I would... If, you know, don't take my prejudices, but I would put Rashi as number one, I would put the Rambam as number two, and the Ramban as a close third. But hey, that's just my prejudice.
Rambam, you said number two?
Right, the Rambam is number two. Yeah. And then a close third is the Ramban. Anyway, the Ramban knew everything. You could ask me, so why is the Rambam greater? You know, if the Ramban knew everything, that's a good catch. We'll leave that out for the time. Says the Ramban, Bizman HaNes, at the time of the original miracle of Purim, Kvar Nifkidu Yisrael V'alu Le'eretz Yisrael, the Jews were already permitted, at the time of Shushan, to enter into the land of Israel. Again, what period in history are we talking about when we talk about the miracle of Purim?
Right before the second temple.
Right, correct. After the destruction of the first temple, before the building of the second temple. You may remember that Koresh was the king of Persia, and he was very good to the Jews, and he allowed them to go to Eretz Yisrael, and technically they were allowed to build the Beit HaMikdash.
It's a 70-year period.
Exactly, 70-year period. So we're in that 70-year period. So the Jews are already allowed to come to Eretz Yisrael. And many of them did. The Afal Pisha Amar Haman, Haman HaRosha, right, get out your gragas now, he said, Yeshno Am Echad Mefuzar Umefurad Bein HaAmim, that the Jewish people, says Haman, are spread throughout the nations. Mikol Makom, nevertheless, Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the men of the Great Assembly, as we call them, Verov Yisrael Kvar Hayu Ba'aretz. Okay, this is the Ramban's claim. We'll see how he knows it. But in any event, he's saying that masses of Jewish people had already settled in Eretz Yisrael. The Achar came at a later period, Hosifu La'lotim Ezra, but then it was a very small population. So if you happen to know the numbers, I think according to the Tanakh, when Ezra Nehemiah called out to the Jewish people to come to live in Eretz Yisrael, 42,000 came. But the Ramban's point is that on an earlier period already, most of the Jews had settled in Eretz Yisrael. That's an interesting historical point. Ukeshitzivach Hashverosh Lashmid La'arog La'beid, the Ramban blames it on Achashverosh, right? Haman was the one who initiated, but Achashverosh signed and sealed the decree. Hayu Yoshvei Hayarot HaPruzot B'Sakana Yoter MiYoshvei HaKrachim HaMukafim. The Jews who lived in the open, wide cities were in greater danger than those Jews who lived in walled cities. Okay? And this is based on a pasuk in Nehemiah that the Nehemiah writes, again, we don't have to get into this now, that the enemies of the Jewish people were very upset if there were breaks in the wall and the and those breaks were sealed, they were rectified. When the miracle happened and the Jews were saved, asu kulam b'shana rishana mishteh v'simcha b'yom shenachu me'oyveh. The Jews would celebrate on the day that they rested from their enemies. Kirichtiv, as it says, this is in the last chapter of Megillat Esther. V'shar ha'yudim asher b'midot ha'melech nikalu v'amod al nafsham b'yom shloshasar. So they defended themselves on the 13th, and Noach bar Ba'asa, they rested on the 14th. Vasau to yom mishtev simcha. That's as far as everybody. The ilu yudei Shushan, but the Jews that lived in Shushan, shenikalu aloyveihem, gam biyom yudalit, so they were busy at war against their enemies even on the 14th. Asu et hapurim imacharat hanes shalahem, they established Purim on the next day, which was the 15th. Ubishanim shalachar mikan, years later, nahagu aprazim me'atzmam biyom arbasar simcha umishtev yom tov. What does he mean me'atzmam?
By themselves.
It wasn't formulated as a legal, it wasn't, shall we say, passed as a legal law. This was almost a spontaneous custom that they repeated what had been done at the time of the miracle. And they reenacted a day of Simcha Umishtev Yom Tov. The Ilam Ukafim Lo Asu Klum. They didn't do anything. Why? Lefisha Etzlam Lo Haya Hanes Gadol Kolka. Do you hear this? This is the Ramban's breakthrough here. Again, not all the Rishonim are going to agree. But the Ramban's breakthrough is that those Jews who were in the walled cities were living in a secure situation. And the miracle wasn't that
miraculous.
It wasn't so dramatic for them.
Well, why did they end up...
Wait. Let's just finish the Ramban. You know, again, we're learning this together. So before you hit me, let's just get it down. I have to get it down too. I actually prepared on Daf Dalet for tonight. Okay. So he says the following. He says, Ilu amukafim lo asu klum ufish etzlam lo haya hanes gadol kol kach kibi prazim shayu b'sakana gdola yoter. So the open cities were in greater decoration. And that, says the Ramban, is the meaning of the following verse in Megillat Esther. Al-Kena Yehudim HaPrazim HaYoshvim Barei HaPrazot Osim Et Yom Arba'as HaLechodesh Adar Simcha U'Mishteh, says the Ramban, V'lo Huzku Kan Mukafim Klal. In this particular passage, there's no mention whatsoever of those who lived in the walled cities. Because this Pasuk is describing the spontaneous celebration or marking of the 14th, by whom? By the Bnei Ayarot. It wasn't yet legislated. Uliachar Zman, but later on, Kishir HaKadosh Baruch Hu et Einei Mordechai Ubeit Dino, the divine light, so to speak, shone on the eyes of Mordechai and his court, which was the highest court in the land. Heim Kavu Takana, they established an obligation. Shekulam prazim umukafim yaasu zechelines. So again, initially the mukafim were not celebrating anything. Purim was an unknown to them. It only became known when the Chachamim established Purim. And once they established Purim, it was established as a holiday for everyone. Lefi shekulam hayu bichlal asakana. There was, in fact, some level of danger, even though what the Ramban is saying here is that the Jews in the Mukafim sensed that they were secure. But it really wasn't so.
Secure from the decree?
They felt that they were secure because of the fact that this city was walled, whatever city it was. But in truth, they were in danger, and that's the truth that the Chachamim, somehow through, let's call it, for argument's sake, Ruach HaKodesh, I don't want to get into details here, but L'chech amru chachamim sh'ra'ui l'akdim u'l'kvo yom tov l'prazim kodem l'mukafim. Although every Jew was in danger, and therefore every Jew had to celebrate, commemorate the miracle, but nevertheless, who was in greater danger? Those who lived in the open cities. So therefore the chachamim says, let's give them an earlier date. The earlier date of Purim, says the Ramban, namely Yud Dalet for the Arim, for the cities, is in a sense a banner, or it demonstrates the fact that their Nes was greater. L'fish hayad nisam gadol. V'gam mishum shetchilu b'mitzvah me'atzmah. This is also a reward to them. You know, it's like the Chachamim were tipping their hat to them because they had already spontaneously, on their own, Batzmam, celebrated, commemorated this great miracle. L'fichak havu yom tov shal prazim b'yom yuchad lahem levad dahainu b'yudalit ulemukafim kavu et yom tetvav shebo nachu yudei shushan. So again, the Ramban has not yet addressed our question of why we go back to the time of Yoshua. That still remains an outstanding question. But the question that he does answer is, why the Chachamim established 2 days of Purim? And it's a complex answer that has different parts to it. One part to it is, in a sense, the Chachamim wanted to give a certain honor and recognize the greatness of the Arim, because these people in the big cities had taken upon themselves a Simcha of Purim, so if they gave them Kedimah, they gave them an earlier date. Secondly, they were in greater danger, therefore their miracle was that much more profound because they were living in the open cities. And thirdly, because that day, namely the 14th, was the day in which, at the time of the miracle, they had rested from their enemies. The Bnei Akrachim, Mukafim Choma, on the other hand, did not deserve that Kedima because they didn't celebrate Purim on their own. Secondly, Yudalit would not have been an appropriate day for them because they did not rest on Yudalit. They were still busy attacking their enemies. And therefore, the Chachamim decided that we need another day of Purim distinct from the original Purim for the sake of the Bnei Akrachim. And the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, who's much later than the Ramban, doesn't like it. What doesn't he like about the Ramban? He says, "Be'emet me'olam lo hayazman shebo asu prazim yom tov v'lo mukafim." There is no time period in which only the city dwellers commemorated Purim, and those who were in walled cities did not. He says, "Bechol amakamot nahagu yom tov." In all places, they observed the day of Purim, b'chol hashanim, on all the years, el shekol minha kol makom nagu yom tov biyom shenachu bo. Each place commemorated the day of Purim on the day in which it rested, the members of that place rested, shaprazim nachu barbasar, and therefore they too commemorated the day of Purim on the 14th. Vayudim asher b'shushan nachu b'chamishasar. I may have said it wrong, but those who lived in the cities rested on the 14th. Those who lived in the walled cities rested on the 15th. The acharkach kishekavu aleihem yom tov lidorot kavu lachad lachol yom biyom menuchatov. Umikevan sheikara nes haya b'shushan shaita mukefet choma lachen tzirfula et kol akrachim amukafim choma. So far we have a machlok, we have a controversy between the Ramban on the one hand and the Ran on the other hand about the following question. Was there a celebration of the members of the walled cities subsequent to the miracle? The Ramban says there wasn't. They felt secure, they didn't appreciate the miracle, they didn't celebrate. The Ran disagrees. The Ran, although the Pasuk seems to indicate like the Ramban, because the Pasuk doesn't mention anything about the Krakayim, nevertheless, the Ran is convinced that every Jew commemorated Purim on the day of Nachu Me'aveihem. That was the day that they had to thank Hashem because the battle was over.
But isn't Machlok Metzias?
First of all, let's ask if there are any nafkaminas to this Machlok. Does it, as we say, does it cut ice? You know, is there some sort of
practical difference?
Excellent, practical difference.
Sounds like it's academic.
Right. He says the following in the footnote. He says, Nimtza lefi divrei Ramban, Masha tiknu chazal mukafim betetvav, hu bi'ikar mishum chashivut haprazim. The only reason Chazal made that extra step and organized a Purim on the 15th for the walled cities is because of the prazim. It was really the main thrust of the miracle. And the recognition of Chazal was given to whom? to the prazim. They become the primary. The ilu l'divrei haran, masha tiknu l'mukafim la'asot b'tetvav, hu mishum kvod ha'mukafim. So again, according to the Ramban, the real kavod of having the celebration of Purim established as a takana was given to whom?
14.
Not the walled cities, but to the open cities, right? The Prazim. They really were the ones who deserved Purim. But just that once half or whatever percentage, it's called 90% of the Jewish people are already celebrating a chag, a zman. So it's impossible for the Chachamim to establish a Zman that's relevant only to part of the population. In other words, when we learn Zmanim, right, the Rambam has one of his 14 books of the Mishnah Torah is called Zmanim. Is there any Zman that is limited in its application to a part of the population of Jewish people? In fact, there is. Anybody know what I have in mind? Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galuyot. Right? Okay, but that really evolves from what we call Sveika Diyom, because they didn't know exactly which day. But to take a holiday and establish it from the get-go on part of the population, not for all the population, that's unthinkable. But if you ask what motivated the establishment of, and who deserved the establishment of this holiday, according to Ramban, it's only the Arim HaPrazot. In the Ran's perspective, on the other hand, there's no difference between the Prazim, the members of the open cities, and the members of the Krachim, of the walled cities. They both had spontaneously taken upon themselves to grant, to give praise to Almighty for the miracle, each respectively on its day of Yom Menucha, and therefore, it's not fair to say that the primary establishment of the day of Purim is the 14th, as the Ramban would have it. Again, we still don't have a practical difference between the Ramban and the Ran. We have what I'd call a conceptual difference in terms of what motivated and what is the real day of Purim, so to speak. You see, let me give you an example. Supposing you were planning to be on the 14th of Adar in an open city, and you were also planning to be in a walled city on the 15th. Where should you commemorate Purim?
Where do you live? Where do you originally live?
I don't live anywhere. I'm a hobo.
No,
you know.
Walled city.
No.
According to Ramban, I would say it's on the 14th.
Right, non-walled
city. The bigger miracle.
Because that's really the day of Purim. You know, they added a day of Purim on behalf of the Mukafim Choma because they couldn't be left out of the Takana of Purim. They also have to express praise. But according to the Ran, it's like flip a coin. I have no clue whether or not the Iker Purim is on Yudalit or the Iker Purim on Tetvav. You know, the fact that this is a greater population, this is less, I think is totally irrelevant.
Yeah, I think I'm missing out on something. When you said that people in the walled cities were less concerned, were they under the influence of the Persian Empire? Or
you mean why weren't the Persians able to attack them from within?
Yeah, if it was part
it seems
of the
like
empire.
The Ramban is assuming that there are enemies coming from without,
yeah,
and they're going to attack the Jewish people. The Jews are often with the additional protection of the walls around the city, but as you point out very well, that's not going to help us for those enemies that are within the walls.
Yeah.
So that's why I think the Ramban is admitting that this sense of security that the people in the walled cities had is a false sense of security. There were plenty of enemies of the Jewish people within Shushan. But admittedly, the walled city did give the Jews a certain element of security. By the way, does anybody know where else in Halakha we give special recognition to a walled city? Because of the security?
If you sell a property because you're poor.
Correct. And which parasha is that in? Do you know? That's in Bahar. And there, at the end of Sefer Vayikra, the Torah says, as you say very well, that if you're living in a walled city and you sell your land,
you have the right to buy it.
Then you have the right to buy it back. You have a zchut pidyah, a zchut gula, for up to 12 months. And that's granted as a respect for the city itself. The city itself, Asher Lo Choma, that has a wall, or at least it had a wall at some point. We have to see exactly where. That city has a special status because of its security. The security that's offered itself is, from a halachic perspective, al pidin, a status. It's very fascinating. You know, that status, special status, is given to halacha because of security. If I would give you a modern application of that, it would probably be the state of Israel. You know, the fact that Jews can get security in the state of Israel with all the problems that exist, and we have enemies from within and 80 million from without, but nevertheless, at the end of the day, we have a way of defending ourselves, which we didn't have 50 and 100 years ago. My father came from a town in Lithuania, which was called Plisa, it was near Vilna, and he told me that Jewish blood was like hefker. You know, if a guy wanted to take your life, there was no din unless dying. This is my father telling me. I'm not talking about, you know, my great-great-grandfather, you know what I'm saying? So the idea of security is a very important idea, and you see it in the parasha of Arim Mukafot Choma with regard to the special sanctity that they have, and the land belongs to the owner, etc., etc. Here we see it in terms of the Ramban's understanding of the fact that Tetvav was a day that commemorates the fact that the Jews had a certain element of protection, but not total protection. They too were saved by the miracle of Pur.
This protection just because they were inside a walled city?
Against the enemies from without. Correct? What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
The wall was the protection itself. It wasn't that they were...
The wall protected them right from the enemies from without. So it wasn't like enemies from without could come right into the city and just mow down all the Jews. It wasn't so.
But the miracle we're talking about is being saved from the decree, though, right?
No, there was a war. The day that we fast, the 13th, there was actual war. Yeah. The people who attacked them.
Okay. Now I want to go a step further with you, and he says the following: there's going to be a machloket on Bet Amud Bet between Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha and the Chachamim. Excuse me. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is of the opinion that Mukafim, walled cities, refers to Mukafim Mimot Achashverosh, from the time of the miracle. And according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, the established day of the 15th in cities like Shushan and other cities that were walled reflect the fact that they had that security. However, the Tana of our Mishnah is not Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, because the Tana of our Mishnah says Mukafim Choma Mimot Yoshua bin Nun. So how could that reflect security? Because the fact that way back when, at the time of Yoshua bin Nun, the walls surrounded, let's say, the city of Jericho, I'm just throwing out a name, that doesn't do anything for those who were in danger at the time of Shushan. And here, the Ran comes up with a brand new principle. Yesh Lomar, says the Ran, Shetiknu Kach, why did they establish, according to the Tan of our Mishnah, that walled cities from the time of Yeshua ben Nun should have their separate celebration? Mipnei Chvoda Shel Eretz Yisrael. And he quotes a Yushalmi, a Talmud Yushalmi. Just give me one more minute and then we'll try to analyze this. Yushalmi says, in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kedei lachlok kavod le'eretz Yisrael, shahaita chareva ba'otam yamin. Now what's going on here? The Ramban had already established that the Jews were coming back to Eretz Yisrael even before the miracle of Purim. But what was the status of Eretz Yisrael during that 70-year period? Was it called, what?
It was occupied.
It was occupied by foreign nations, not by the Jewish people. They didn't have political independence. But more important, what didn't they have during that 70 years?
They were thrown out of the land.
They didn't have the Beit HaMikdash. That's called churban. In other words, the word chareva, which means desolate, has a technical connotation in halacha. For example, if you open up to Nachem, which we recite on Mincha and Tisha B'Av, you'll see it's called Ir HaChareva. Jerusalem is called a desolate city. So somebody wanted to come along and change. You know, today we have Baruch Hashem, Yerushalayim is settled. And gentlemen, I don't know if you own any property in Yerushalayim, but it's a good time to buy because all the Jews from France are coming out to buy, so the prices are going up. So you can get a good deal. It's already too late probably to get a good deal. So in any event, Jerusalem today is settled.
But still technically it's
called Chareva. No, until the Beit HaMikdash is built, that's why, for example, what do we do when we come to the old city, or at least to the Kotel, again, different minhagim, we cut Kriya. Why? Because it's Chur. Haroa ir b'churbana is chayv l'krot. He has to Kriya. Why is it called b'churbana? After all, it's settled. You have big buildings and stuff like that. You have the Knesset. You know, I got all these, got museums. The answer is because there's no what? No Beit HaMikdash. If there's no Beit HaMikdash, then it's called Chareva. So therefore, even though Jews at the time of Purim had come to settle in Eretz Yisrael, it's still considered Chareva until what? Until the Beit HaMikdash would be built. And therefore, we need something called Lachlok Kavod LeEretz Yisrael. What does it mean, Lachlok Kavod LeEretz Yisrael? Supposing we would have instituted Purim on the 15th on behalf of walled cities that are walled at the time of Shushan and exclude cities that were walled at the time of Yoshua ben Nun. That would be, so to speak, an insult
to Yerushalayim,
to Eretz Yisrael. The Tveria or Yericho, whatever cities are walled at the time of Yoshua ben Nun. So in other words, according to the Ran, we now have a two-stage process. On the one hand, we're going to establish a day of Purim for those who had originally rested on the 15th at the time of the miracle. That certainly doesn't include those who live in Yerushalayim. But on the other hand, once having established a day for walled cities, we want to expand that takana in order to give kavod to Eretz Yisrael. There's like a new dimension to the 15th. The establishment of the takana, the 15th, as a separate day of Purim, is going to accomplish two different goals. First, it's going to commemorate the celebration of the miracle for those who lived in Shushan, those who lived at the time of the miracle in walled cities, and secondly, it's going to accomplish a whole other goal. It's going to give kavod to Eretz Yisrael, because we're going to include in the celebration of Tetvav not only the walled cities from the time of the miracle, but also the walled cities from the time of Kibush Eretz Yisrael at the time of Yoshua. That's what comes out according to the Ran, and his support is from the Yerushalmi. On the bottom, in the footnote, he quotes here a Mishnah Brura, Haya ra'ui l'taken shekol ir shehi mukefet choma kimo shushan ta'aseh b'tetvav. It would have made sense that they should have established any city that was walled like Shushan should observe Tetvav. Sharei sibat hakviyut liyom Tetvav hi mishum sheshushan hanes naaseh bo b'tetvav. El kevon she'eretz Yisrael hayta chareva ba'ota et v'lo hayu arim mukafot choma v'im yitlu adin barim mukafot choma mimei achashverish nimtza she'yu ayarot hamukafot choma b'chutz l'aretz chashuvot mehem. We're giving an extra status and chashivut to those cities in Chutz Laretz that are walled above and beyond the cities in Eretz Yisrael. That's not good. Al kein tiknu lechvod Eretz Yisrael shekol ir shaita mukefet choma miyemot Yoshua ben Nun yikra'u b'tetvav v'af al pi she'enan mukafot achshav v'ashar, and the rest of the cities biyudalit milvad shushan the only city in Chutz Laretz that would establish its Purim celebration on the 15th is Shushan. Afal pi she'einam mukefet choma mimot Yehoshua bin Nun. Even though, interesting, the Mishnah Berurah says that the city of Shushan itself was not walled at the time of Yehoshua bin Nun. Afilu hachi korin bo v'tetvav lufi shebana asehanes. So when you ask me what gives the status, the special status to a walled city, and it's given a separate day for Purim, there are two different answers. One answer applies to Shushan, and the other applies to all the other walled cities. The answer for Shushan is Bo Naseh Nes. They have a separate status because they experienced the miracle. Again, according to the Ran, this makes very sense, because that's the pride. They're no less, you know, but the walled cities don't fall shy of the open cities. And number two, the other cities, namely those that are walled from the time of Yehoshua bin Nun, they are getting a special day because of the kavod of Eretz Yisrael.
Are any other answers suggested by the Rishon?
Now he has the Meiri, and that's the third and last, and we'll try to finish up with this. The Meiri, his name is Rabbeinu Menachem HaMeiri. I don't know if you ever heard of him. And he was a late Rishon. And a lot of the Meiri we have only post-Holocaust, because the Vatican had a lot of the manuscripts of the Meiri which were lacking. And somehow they had pity on us, so they gave us this. Right, I don't want to get off on a tangent. Shebemet ha-krachim ha-mukafim choma lerov chashivutam hayara uilem lismach b'shnei ayamin. In effect, he's saying, this is a breakthrough of the Meiri, that because of the special status of a walled city and the fact that it gives protection, it deserves really 2 days of Purim. Interesting idea. I'm not sure if I understand why you should give 2 days of Purim. El shachachamim chashashu, they were afraid, she'im yikru'u et ha-megillah b'yudalid, once they would experience Purim in the reading of the Megillah on Yudalid, tafog simchatam, their simcha would not be so intense. It's like an old kind of simcha. V'lo yismichu kara'ui v'tetvav, shekfar samchu b'yudal, shebo haya yikara nes, al kein teknu shikru'u et ha-megillah b'tetvav, v'az v'day yismichu gam k'tzat b'yudalid, she'yifshar shalo l'smoch bo sharei bo haya yikara nes. He says that they would also, willy-nilly, they would also be happy on the 14th, because that was the day in which most of the Jews experienced the miracle, but the actual celebration will be only on the 15th, but the simcha they'll have, so in other words, what's left from the original proposition, which would have made sense according to me, that they should celebrate 2 days of Purim, what's left is a certain simcha of Yudal. Even though the celebration of reading a Megillah and all the other mitzvot will be instituted on Tetvav, but yet they will have a simcha on Yudalid. And why is that so? Because that's the day in which the Ikar Nes took place. Aval kfarim vayarot gdolot lo hitrichum l'smach el yom echad v'hu yom yudalid shebo haya Ikar Nes. So for the rest of the population living in the large cities, the open cities, and the members of the villages, they would have Purim on Yudalid and not on Tetvav. With the end of Yudalid, they no longer celebrate Purim. Our minhag, and check me out on this if I'm right, does not reflect the Meiri, because, you know, on, let's say I live in a walled city, do I do nefilat ha-payim on Yudalid? The answer is no. You know what I'm talking about?
Tachanun.
Or the flip side, let's say I live in an open city, will I do nefilat ha-payim on Tetvav? No. No, there are 2 days of simcha for everyone. So I don't think that our minhag reflects this opinion of Rabbi Menachem Meiri. And one question that we still didn't address is, where does Yehoshua bin Nun come in? So again, you don't want to limit Mukafot Choma to Achashverosh's time, as Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha did. But why do you go back to Yehoshua bin Nun? You want to give kavod to Eretz Yisrael. Why Yehoshua bin Nun? And the answer to this question, also offered by the Ritva, is Me'achar ve'ilu talua davar b'mukafot choma b'imot achashver shaita kol tzol nechshevet b'chlal arei prazot. Okay, fine. U'mashe talah davar b'imei Yoshua v'lo b'imei Moshe shekavashet arei haprazi atamu mishum sheYoshua nilcham ba'amalek t'chila v'homen haya mizera amalek. Does this make sense to you?
Can you translate?
He's saying that Moshe Rabbeinu, although he did some part of, he did conquer, right, the Amori, right, Sichon, and Og Melech HaBosheh, and so forth and so on, he says, but nevertheless, it was Yoshua who fought the battle against Amalek. It says, K'tov Zot Zikaron B'Sefer V'Simbaz Ne Yoshua. And what's unique about the mitzvah of destroying Amalek? K'shehitchil Yoshua B'Melchemet Amalek Haya Mechazer Liyot Liyota Mestayemet Al Yado. Yoshua tried to complete the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Amor lo K'sheyagi Zmano Shel Amalek Limachot Milafanai Yehu Nizkar Aleha. Even though Yoshua would not be successful in destroying Amalek, but since he started the process, then God promises him that at some point, when there will be given some sort of recognition because of the destruction of Amalek, your name, Yoshua, will be mentioned. You'll have a part of it all. For Husha Shaninu, and that's what we learned. Irshi Mukefe Chomami Mot Yoshua reads the Megillah on Tetvav. This is all in deference and respect to Yoshua, because he really started the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. I'm a little bit confused, frankly, because Moshe Rabbeinu was also involved in the war against Amalek. But I guess because Moshe Rabbeinu was up on the mountain, you remember, he was holding up his hands, he wasn't on the ground actually involved in hand-to-hand combat in the mitzvah of destroying Amalek. It was Yoshua who led the, you know, the troops in battle, and therefore we, in deference to Yoshua's role in destroying Amalek, we will establish the day of 15th of Purim on behalf of the cities that are walled from the time of Yoshua bin. Okay, Rabosai, so we'll stop here.
Nice. Thank you very much. Last time you said that.